Could you speak to the question that under socialism, the Constitution will be a moving target, but apparently one of the principles is that socialist society will be set up along the lines of democratic centralism?
I want to understand that in terms of solid core with a lot of elasticity.
Yeah, well, I think in the history of socialist countries, including in China, this was sort of a concept that you have democracy for the masses, but under a centralized leadership, and in particular, you know, the state structures, and more specifically, the party, which is directly leading the state, and which is, you know, in leadership of the masses, and that's sort of the way it's been conceived of as the centralism aspect. And then you have the masses participating in decision-making and, you know, some realms of electing officials and so on and exercising rights in that context. And I think we have more work to do on this question. And the conception that, you know, I've been wrangling with is a little different than that, although it is an expression of something similar. It is the question of solid core with elasticity. And the solid core does involve the party, and it does involve the instrumentalities, the mechanisms, the institutions of the state. And by the way, you know, if we, as I've said before, get state power and don't know what to do with it, or don't want to exercise it, then we're going to be betraying everything that we went through to get it in the first place. It's not, you know, so you have to wield state power, having won it. And, you know, if you don't, I mean, yes, we want to expand and radically transform, you know, we want to expand the state in terms of masses being drawn more and more into that, and we want to radically transform the institutions and the overall character of the state. But this is a question of setting terms, too, is involved here. You know, the state, that was my point about, for example, the educational system and the, you know, the core curriculum. Or the library. You know, now, just to be clear, for a long time, quantitatively in a library, for example, the majority of books would be non-communist books. When I talk about, you know, sort of the solid core setting the terms in the library, that's a qualitative point. You know, it might even come down to, I was talking to someone about this, about how you organize a library and what's featured more prominently. But it's not going to be quantitatively right away. There aren't enough communist books, and even if there were, we want a lot of other books anyway. So quantitatively, for quite a while, you're going to have, you know, non-communist books. But the communist body of thought, including in the libraries, is setting the terms while, you know, being part of a larger process in which there's difference and opposition to that communist viewpoint on particular questions and overall, in the libraries and the education, you know, and go through every sphere of society. That's your solid core, and you better know how to use it wisely and judiciously, whoever at a given time is leading that. You know, it's bad enough that we have a lot of necessity in the world. But if we're stupid enough to create bad necessity for ourselves, then shame on us. Like, if we have the freedom to teach evolution as a fact in the schools, and we don't do it, well, we're a bunch of fucking idiots who don't deserve to have state power because, you know, somewhere or other, terms are going to get set. So what you can establish to be true, you better teach as truth. And what you can establish to be in the interest of the masses of people, you better put forward as the core of policy at a given time. And then you have a lot of wrangling around that. And yes, you have that epistemological openness to say, well, we may be wrong about this or that aspect of that, or things may change and what was good is no longer good in terms of our objectives. Or, no, that whole policy was wrong and leading us in the wrong way. You know, we've had experiences like that, and we'll have them again in the, you know, even in some fairly dramatic ways under the, you know, dictatorship of the proletariat in terms of the party's leadership there because of the fact that we don't have absolute and complete knowledge at any given time, and we are influenced ourselves by other methodologies and outlooks and how we approach things. And for all those reasons, you know, there are going to be other people going to have, you know, opposition to us that's going to have important elements of truth, but you have to handle correctly that relationship there between that solid core and the elasticity. And that will take expression in the institutions. But the point I was making about the Constitution is that you have to run a society. I mean, you know, a Constitution is, in effect, a set of rules. You have to run a set of rules and a set of principles with which to apply the rules. It's both. Because, you know, there's no law or constitution that can, you know, that can anticipate every particular situation that arises. So it's both a set of rules in a general sense, and it's a set of principles for how to apply the rules to different situations. And that's always, you know, it's never so easy as having a set of rules. You know, that's not the way this works. It's not what it's about. But you have some rules, and then you have principles for how to apply those rules. But life is changing, including if you're succeeding in what you're doing, if you're advancing, you're changing the conditions, both underlying and superstructural conditions that the Constitution has been giving expression to. So then you're going to need to stop and redo the Constitution in some aspects or in major aspects. But while you have a Constitution, the point is, if you basically make the Constitution merely an ornament, merely window dressing, so that in effect, while the Constitution says A, B, or, you know, says A, B, and C, the party just does X, Y, and Z, whatever it wants, and plus it controls the army, you know, and it should be in leadership of the army. But there's where the contradiction comes in. If the party is in leadership of the army and people are exercising what they're supposed to be able to do by the Constitution, and you just bring the army down on them because you can do so, then you're taking everything, you're undermining everything you're about. You're going to drive masses of people away from you, and you're pushing things in the direction of going back to the old way. Now, you know, once again, drawn and quartered right to the brink, you know. You do have constitution and laws. You know, if people are demonstrating, that's one thing. If they begin, you know, if they begin shooting public officials, that's another thing. You know, if we have a socialist society, that should be against the law, okay? You know, I mean, it's not a, you know, anarchists or the equivalent of anarchists shot Lenin, you know, and that's why he died as early as he did, or it was a major contributing factor, you know, and things might have been very different if Lenin, not that Lenin is one person could have overcome all the difficulties, but they might have been very different if Lenin had lived another 20 years. We don't know, to be honest. There's objective necessity, and Lenin would have had to work within it, and he couldn't have just been flying above it, but you know, Lenin was different than the leadership they got after Lenin. So, you know, this is funny, but it's also not funny. So you have laws and you have a constitution, but then even while the party is overall in leadership of the institutions of the state and in general of the government, that is, there are party members in all these institutions, both partly because, the party has in effect put them there, and partly because you're working together with masses and electing people, and some of them will be party members. You know, and because in the Constitution it should be clear what the army and everything else is enforcing. It's enforcing what's in the Constitution, but that's a set of production and social relations, or their reflection in constitutional law, as well as things about the political structures and other things in the superstructure. So it takes embodiment in life in a constitution, and in a certain way, the party has to live with the constitution and work through the constitution, even while ideologically and politically it also works outside of it. Because we don't want to just stay wherever the constitution says things are at a given time. We want to keep moving forward, but we don't want to do it by negating and trampling on the Constitution. We want to do it by winning people to go beyond it, and when there's a basis for a leap, then you have to amend or rewrite the Constitution. But at any given time, even while you're trying to go beyond it, you're working through it. That's what it means to say it's a moving target, and that's another example of contradiction. It both is what it is, and you're trying to move it somewhere else at the same time while living with it and working through it while you're trying to move it somewhere else. Or you're trying to move a society of which the Constitution should be a reflection somewhere else. So, and then you want to give rise to all this ferment, politically, intellectually, and otherwise. Not only do you want to allow people to exercise their rights, but you want to, you know, why are you going to fund, You know, poor old Amy Goodman, here she comes up again. You know, but that you know, those, you know, exception to the rulers. Why are you going to fund the exceptions? You know, are there, let me get it, Arundhati? Arundhati Roy, or however we want to say it. You know, if Arundhati is correct, then okay. You know, why are you going to fund or at least give access to the influence? Why are you going to, if not fund, or perhaps fund, give access to the influencing of public opinion to such people who can command a following? Because of everything we've been talking about. Because this is what's necessary in order for the masses and people to hear the different ideas and to enter into the battle over them and to thrash things through and with the leadership of the party, which doesn't mean we'll win every argument, by the way. That's part of living with the Constitution, too. We won't win every argument. You know, if there are emergent, look, we're living in a real world. If there are emergency measures, then, you know, yes, aspects of the Constitution may have to be modified in an emergency. But then, do you struggle against spontaneity to immediately restore them as quickly as you can? Or do you take advantage, quote-unquote, of the emergency to basically do away with inconvenient parts of the Constitution and turn them into meaningless, you know, formalities? This is the real world we're going to be dealing with here. You know, this is why you're not every day, no, not every day, but repeatedly going to be brought to the brink of being drawn and quartered. And this is how you have to handle this, because this process will get us where we're going, and I'm firmly convinced no other process will. But you need your solid core in there. If you let go of that, then you're going to go back to bourgeois democracy and everything that we've been talking about that goes into bourgeois democracy or underlies bourgeois democracy, the real dictatorship that, you know, is the inner essence of that outer form of bourgeois democracy, and all the production and social relations and all the cultural expressions and all the other horrors, not just in one country but in the world, that go along with that. So you're going to have that solid core at every point. But, you know, I made this point, you want the solid core to be expanding at every point also, to the maximum degree possible. You want to be working as much as you can at every point way down the road, but you want to be going as far down the road as you can at every point to where you don't need a solid core in the same way. You're not going to have absolute flat evenness in communist society, but it's not going to have the same social implications and social expression and class differences and social antagonism when you have different people with different inclinations and different strengths and weaknesses. We're not going to turn out, you know, on some press. You put in the right calculations and you turn out, you know, a few hundred million people all stamped out identically. No. To quote George Bush the First, can't do it, don't want it. You know, it's not what we're about. But, you know, we do have to have, you know, a core here, you know, that is holding on to power, is expanding, is moving at each step toward eventually overcoming that need for such a core, that need and that reality where some, not only individuals, but some social groups exert an influence beyond their numbers. In other words, a disproportionate, an influence out of proportion to their numbers in society. That's what you have when you have a vanguard. You have a group in society that exerts an influence quite a ways larger or out of proportion to its actual numbers at any given time. Why? Not simply because it's at the levers of power, that's true, but also it is, let's face it, an organized machinery. This is what makes a lot of, you know, people, you know, quiver a little bit sometimes, because they'll say, well, look, I can argue with you, you know, and you and I can have our disagreements, but you're part of a whole organized machinery. You know, and even if I have a good argument with you, that may not mean any, that may not make any difference. You're still part of an organized machinery, and, you know, that all those, you know, people you got up there running that machinery are going to decide what to do anyway. Well, is there nothing to that? No, there's something to that. So what kind of organized machinery are we going to have? Are we going to have an organized machinery that recognizes this is a real and potentially antagonistic contradiction or not? If you don't even recognize the contradiction, well, you got no chance of handling it correctly. Look, a lot of these petty bourgeois people, and you know, in general, you know, they're caught up in and a lot of masses too, by the way, they're caught up in commodity relations. You know, and it gets directly reflected in how they look at leadership. You know, they don't want anybody's commodity to have any more value than theirs. At a minimum. So therefore, they look at leadership that way. They don't want anybody to have more influence than they do. They translate it into theories about elites and all, and hierarchies and all. But it's basically, it's a reflection of that principle. But it's not like there's nothing to what's being raised here. You know, there is a real contradiction. You have an organized machinery. If that organized machinery turns into one that's, you know, is following a priorist methods of thinking, instrumentalist methods of thinking and acting, it will produce very bad things. And it will be able, especially when it's got its hands on the levers of power, it will be able to enforce bad things on people. Let's be honest here. You cannot get where we need to go without such a quote-unquote organ. I mean, I'm vulgarizing what it is. It should be, first of all, an ideological, you know, and political association. It's fundamentally voluntarily, but it does have discipline. Because we need discipline. Because you can't do what we're setting out to do without discipline, without people all pulling together. I don't mean, you know, discipline like in the bourgeois military. I mean people acting together in unison once decisions have been taken through the channels of the party about what needs to be done. But that organized machinery can have a big impact, way beyond the numbers. You know, you can sit in a meeting, a couple of party members and 200 other people. But those 200 other people, when they leave the meeting, are going to be dispersed. And even if they get together, you know, the 198 of them that are not in the party afterward, they're not going to get together on the same basis to be able to have the same impact. Those two party members go back and they're part of a whole machinery. These other people are dispersed. Is this a real contradiction? Yes, it is. So we better recognize it and handle it correctly. That's what a lot of this is aimed at dealing with, is this contradiction, and even more profoundly, the underlying contradictions that give rise to it and make it necessary. So this is not a contradiction of our invention. This is a contradiction that flows out of where we are in relation to where we need to go, where we are in the historical evolution of human society, not heading towards some predetermined end, but just where we've gotten to and what the social and production relations are and how that gives expression in terms of unevenness among people and social divisions among people. So that's what makes a vanguard necessary, but you better recognize what it is. And you better recognize what the contradictions are between that and the broader masses of people and handle it correctly at every point. You don't do everything you could do if it's not the right thing to do. See, and that's where the instrumentalism comes in. You go into a meeting, you can carry the day. And, you know, look, it's like, you know, you got real urgency about things. You know, and you're sitting to some of these people who want to just palaver all day long and never come to any decisions or do anything or want to take things where they really shouldn't go. And, you know, your necessity gets intensified. But you better understand what you're dealing with. You should not do something just because you could get away with doing it, because it serves your short-term ends. We can wield the machinery of the party to make this or that happen. Well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. Sometimes you consciously hold back and don't do that, even though you could, because from a larger standpoint, where you're trying to go and the understanding that unless masses of people do this, it's not really going to go where it needs to go. And unless they do it consciously and voluntarily in a fundamental sense, it's not going to go where it needs to go. Then if you lose sight of that, you lost sight of everything. Why bother to have this machinery? So these are the kind of contradictions. Those don't go away under socialism. They get intensified. So we better get the right principles and methods and you know, accumulate some experience in applying them more and more correctly while recognizing we'll make mistakes and learning how to recognize them more quickly and correct them more fully. And then socialist society is going to be the same thing. We want to expand the core, but, you know, and it's not, you know, we don't want to create bad necessity, but we do want to create good necessity. What's good necessity? Well, you go to school and you learn evolution. That's good necessity. We're creating for masses of people. You know, it's not like, what do you know? It's not like God is going to tell the people what's true about evolution. Okay, so somebody's going to have to set some terms here somewhere. But on what basis do we set terms, and what does it have to do with where we're trying to go and how we understand all the complexity and the correct application, well, first of all, what the principles are and what are the correct applications to get there? That's what's involved here, and that's what that solid core at every point has to be leading, but it has to. The moving target point, to go back to your question, is it's you're both working through it and trying to change the conditions that will make it obsolete in certain aspects at one and the same time. And that's what makes it, that's another, you know, tension you have to handle correctly.